This is Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks, where a spirit board conversation sparked our spiritual evolution. I'm Shale.
And I'm Cheyenne. And each week, we explore a world where there is much more than meets the eye. So pour yourself a drink and join us as we cheers to a witchin' good time.
All right. Welcome back to episode 2 of season 5. We
That's my line. You can't take that.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm not original today.
We are coming at you with some chaotic energy, as you would expect. But would you want anything else? Otherwise, why are you here? You don't come here for the structure. You come here for the lack of hinge.
Let's be real. There are 500 incredible paranormal podcasts who will give you exactly.
We are not one of them. We are incredible, but not in that way.
But not that way.
Finger guns.
We are incredibly fun. La la la. Okay.
Speaking of fun, what are you drinking today, my love?
I'm drinking. I was telling Shale before we recorded it. You won't see pictures.
It looks mutilated, whatever it is.
Disgusting. I'm calling it a sanguine sipper.
Sanguine.
Yeah, like blood.
I don't get it, but it's apparently really strong because she just acts like she just huffed gasoline. So
it tastes like gasoline. This one is going in our recipe book. I need to get all that jam like mixed up in there. Sanguine, the word sanguine is actually a Latin for blood.
Oh, okay. I'm so uneducated when it comes to Latin.
I think it's been co-opted and it means something else now too, but it's like a very specific color. It's like a paint color that looks like dried blood. So I rimmed my glass in strawberry jam.
Delish.
Which is hopefully going to make this drink palatable. But it's just an old fashioned with a strawberry jam.
Oh,
rim.
Okay.
So it is.
My husband would love that. He's an old fashioned guy.
And bitters and strawberry jam. And it needs more water.
Be right back. Anyway, while Cheyenne is gone, I'm also drinking not something so fancy, but some wine, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's a tradition we started with the casket girls, but like it just doesn't feel like you can talk vampires without wine now. So
I agree. We're talking about vampires today. Surprise.
We're talking about a very specific vampire too, that I'm just, this story, y'all, is, I couldn't help but giggle the entire time I was doing research because it's just the wildest thing. We've got a vampire, a Victorian cemetery. We got dueling paranormal investigators. We have a mob frenzy. Like anything and everything you could think of is encapsulated in this story, and it's wild. So I can't wait to dive into it.
I cannot wait. Before we do that, let's pull a Dizzy Damn card.
A Dizzy Damn card.
Any guesses what deck we're pulling from today?
Buffy?
Buffy!
That only makes sense.
We are pulling from our Buffy deck today, and the lovely Miss Judgment just popped out.
I feel like that's passive aggressive.
A little bit. A little bit. So, Judgment. Oh, dear. It's okay. I'm the editor. I will edit the things. You know, I really should by now have the order of the majors fucking memorized, but I don't. I still flip through it like, where's the card? Every time.
But also, like, each deck has their own kind of interpretation too. So I feel like
that's true. But I feel like they
part of it.
At least do these in the right order. Where is Judgment? Where does she? Here she goes. Judgment comes after the Sun, y'all. So our Judgment card is Miss Anya Jenkins. If you don't know who she is, it's fine. Go watch Buffy or don't. She is. I can't stop you. She's standing behind a counter with her arms crossed. She's working at the magic shop. And has a bunch of trinkets and goodies behind her. This deck is beautiful. I will try to remember to post a picture of it for you. Although others have found her strange and off-putting, there is no denying that Anya has learned from her past and welcomed a brighter future. For 1,000 years, she wielded the power of the wish, brought ruin to the heads of unfaithful men. I mean, amazing. So Anya essentially, Anya's story, for those who don't know, is just that. She's a murderer of cheaters. It's great. We love her. And she brought,
I mean, there's worse jobs to have for sure.
Right, like, it's fine. Don't do the crime if you can't pay the time.
Yeah.
And brought forth chaos and destruction until she found herself human. So she's to be demon. Anya embodies judgment with her many awakenings of the spiritual nature. She learned what it is to love, to mourn, and to have a family. This card invites you to put your past behind you, no matter how many men you have flayed, and give yourself an opportunity to change. I would say maybe don't change if you're flaying men. I mean, there are some men who listen to this who we love. Hello. But yeah, she's great. Don't judge your past too harshly. And don't judge your potential future by where you've come, because you're not going there anymore and things are different.
Exactly.
Insight.
Not sure how that's going to relate to our episode today, but maybe it'll be woven in here somewhere.
I will remember. I'm going to leave her out. I'll look at her. It'll
we'll see where she comes through.
It'll just pop up. Okay, so who the hell are we talking about today?
All right, we are talking about the Highgate Vampire and the Highgate Cemetery. So this is a story that I came across like pretty recently, probably in the last like 5 or so years, but it's just a story that is so steeped in folklore and mystique and just so fascinating for the time that it was in. It's one of those that I was telling Cheyenne, I was like, I think we could have made like a 3-part series out of this because there's so many layers to this story. I'm just going to be touching on the highlights. Definitely, if you're interested in this, continue to dive in more. Though we're going to focus obviously on the vampire itself. And then there's a couple of main characters by the name of David Ferrant and Sean Manchester. So keep them in mind through the story.
Hey, lovely listeners. Are you as obsessed with my co-host as I am? Who am I kidding? Of course you are. So for even more herbal goodness, make sure you're following thinningofthevale.apothecary on Instagram and check out Shale's website at thinningofthevaleapothecary.com. Here you'll find her gorgeous blog, herbal offerings, consultation information, and a beautiful community that grows bigger every day. You don't want to miss this journey. And thank you so much for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. See you online.
All right, so where did the Highgate Vampire story originate? So the vampire is a legend that came out of the aptly named Highgate Cemetery. So this cemetery is located in North London, England on Swains Lane. They feel like it's very specific to mention Swains Lane a lot. I think it's a common like passageway for a lot of people. So Swains Lane feels like it's fun to say and also feels like it shows up a lot. But it's obviously located in the Highgate neighborhood of North London. It's an old cemetery having been built in 1839 and now holds over 170,000 people. So it's a pretty significant as far as size goes. And the cemetery has been long steeped in folklore and spooky stories. It's actually very beautiful. If you look up images of this, it has a very Victorian feel to it. Very kind of overgrown, feels like fairies kind of live there, just very green and vibrant. It's got all of the feels. And it has a lot of tombstones and whatnot that really remind me a lot of what you would see in New Orleans, like very beautiful designs, very artistic, a lot of intention put into this cemetery. So the legend of the actual vampire dates back to the late 1960s. In early 1970s. And this is because reports of eerie occurrences in the Highgate Cemetery began to surface. Funny enough, these reports were not just reported to anyone. They were reported to the British Psychic and Occult Society first, which when you think about the time period in which this happened, right? Like, it's just interesting that a group like this existed. There's like an institution around this, but also this is also the late 60s, right? Where there's a resurgence in spirituality. This is when Wicca really took off around the world. Gerald Gardner had passed away by this time, I believe, but it was when it became more of a global phenomenon. People were kind of rejecting cultural norms and religion and things like that and looking for a different way. So the fact that these kinds of things stood up at that time is really interesting.
Yeah, I love that. And to be fair though, like who else are you? I was literally just about to say who you're going to call, but like
the British Paranormal Ghost Society.
Like literally who else are you going to call?
So these occurrences, there were several witnesses that claimed to see something pretty in common. So the claims were to have been a tall and shadowy figure with glowing red eyes. Like that's very distinct. And it's a common occurrence across all of these reports. And what's interesting is they all claim that it moved really effortlessly throughout the cemetery. So think Nosferatu, right? Like a vampire, like Dracula is like floating around. Like that's kind of what they saw.
Amazing.
Eventually, a witness actually claimed to have been hypnotized by something lurking in the shadows. So they were to see that and then were having a hard time actually moving out of the cemetery. They got really kind of discombobulated and disoriented. So that's kind of what really started sparking a little bit more of maybe this isn't just a spirit, but is an actual vampire. So coupling of red eyes, Nosferatu type behavior, and the fact that this guy was psychically attacked, apparently. Soon after that report, two teenage girls also claimed that while they were walking home, they witnessed spirits rising from the dead out of their graves, like saw that actually happen. And furthermore, what's kind of interesting is a lot of animal mutilation started occurring around the cemetery, particularly dead foxes. And why this was distinct is because they showed up with like lacerations in their throat. I know, not pretty stuff.
Sad.
But this is where it actually started becoming part of the media because this was so prominent that there were so many of these animal mutilations occurring. So by 1970, this story actually started making headlines in the local papers. People were asking, you know, what is happening to the foxes in particular and what's going on with all of these reported sightings of something in common. And the newspaper actually called out, you know, what's this like spirit or this vampire? Like the headlines actually use that kind of language. And so that eventually sparked the interest of David Ferrant, who was a paranormal researcher through the British Occult Society. But he had the suspicion that the animals could have been a result of dark magic or satanic rituals. That will also come into play quite a bit throughout this story. And this is what he initially thought it was, but later claimed that he also thought it was a vampire in an actual newsletter or a newspaper editorial in the local paper, which was called the Hampstead and the Highgate Express. So that's where the story started. Why do we think it was a vampire? So I wanted to share some of the witness accounts that I came across. There are a plethora of them. Like this is a well-cited, well-documented. This is one of those, think like Amityville Horror, like really well-known in the paranormal community, particularly of course in Britain. I don't think it's like as well-known over here in the States, but it is really interesting like how well-documented this was. There's literal newspaper articles around it and a whole media frenzy that we'll get into. So I wanted to share some of the witness accounts. We kind of touched on them, but here are some specific ones on why this became a vampire story. So Jane Smith, who was a local resident, reported a spine tingling encounter in the cemetery when she recounted feeling an intense cold and hearing whispered voices near a mausoleum. Jane then claimed to have seen the shadowy figure with glowing red eyes moving towards her. Terrified, she fled the scene, leaving behind her bicycle. Andrew Williams, who was a college student, also had a terrifying experience during a late night stroll in the cemetery. He recalled an overwhelming feeling of dread as he ventured deeper into the graveyard. Suddenly, Andrew sensed a presence behind him. When he turned, he caught a fleeting glimpse of a tall, dark figure before it disappeared into the shadows. I think I have a couple more that I want to read here, but I think it's just really fascinating that there was such commonality between all of the witness reports. And again, like there is like kind of that mob mentality, right? Or maybe that groupthink bias, but it's just interesting that each of these individual reports seem to have a tall, dark figure that floats through the cemetery and has glowing red eyes. So I don't know how you feel about that, but.
Why are the eyes the creepy thing?
I don't know.
like what?
I don't know. Glowing red. It's so funny because to me, like when you think of glowing red eyes, like I'm imagining it. And this is probably just a result of how much horror I have consumed in my life.
Right.
Because I feel like it's kind of a silly image, right? Like if you just like think of it, you're like, oh, this is very like, if I was trying to scare you, it would be like, yeah. Oh, big scary cloak and glowing red eyes. But I mean, I would be scared shitless if this happened to me. Right. Yeah, I'm not going to act like I would be like, LOL, you're funny. But yeah, it's just, I think it's because I'm imagining red eyes in like a very 2023, like robotic spirit Halloween decoration kind of way.
Also that time of year when you see all those like animatronics around, like we're in the Halloween season, right?
Yeah, there was a real big one at Costco that Brandon wouldn't let me buy last week. Give me some more. I like these witnesses.
All right. So Helen Adams, who is a local journalist, interviewed witnesses in 1970. While exploring the cemetery for research, she claimed to have seen a figure with piercing red eyes staring at her from a distance. The experience left Helen shaken, and she later documented the encounter in her article about the Highgate vampire phenomenon. All right, so here's like the craziest story where this vampire theory really starts to take off. So a young schoolgirl named Elizabeth, I think her last name is pronounced Wojilda. Don't quote me on that. I'm probably butchering it. But she claimed to have seen the vampire while walking down Swain's Lane. Shortly after, she began having recurring nightmares where something evil entered her room. Furthermore, she started actually developing anemia and growing really, really ill, and even had two wounds that looked like a bite mark on her neck.
So he's feeding
on Manchester. What's that?
It's like a freaking...
Dracula.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, Dracula. But it's also like very Freddy Krueger-esque.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. That like, makes it like that much
literally creepier. Like he's feeding in her sleep.
Ew.
Like, I didn't even think IRL. Of it. Like he's feeding on her in the spiritual realm, which is fucking gross. It's gross. Yeah, it's grosser.
As I was reading this, like the way it came across is that like she thinks that she's dreaming, but she's actually like experiencing this sort of a thing, and then just keeps waking up being like, oh, I think they're nightmares. But what if it really was like her being attacked from the spiritual realm? Like, I hate that.
It's kind of, it has a similar feeling to my Beyond the Veil dream experience.
Ew, no, that gives me chills because that was like,
just in like that feeling of like you were dreaming, but I was not dreaming. Like that was definitely like an out of body astral projection.
Ugh, kind of nasty. Disgusting. If you have not yet heard that story, make sure to check out episode 1 of season 4.
I think so.
Where we discussed it. Super creepy. Anyway, so these bite marks appear on her neck, and then Sean Manchester, who is the second character in this story, he actually filled her room with garlic, crucifixes, and holy water. So it seems pretty freaking cliche, but lo and behold, her condition improved. She stopped having the nightmares, stopped having the bite marks, and her anemia went away.
Okay, question. What are the magical properties of garlic?
I should know that, and I don't really. I know it's very steeped in folklore and a lot of like protective properties. Okay. Obviously.
I'm just wondering like where the garlic... I should have researched that. Where did the garlic vampire connection originally start?
That's a great question. I do know that garlic is super effective for like immune needs and like strengthening your immune system.
Protectant either way.
Yeah. So I think it was something that was really used, especially in, you know, more medieval times to help boost your immune system and keep out like evil spirits. Right. Yeah. Okay. So I think that's kind of where it cross-translated over. So obviously, once these stories reached the media, more people started approaching Ferrant and Manchester with similar claims of similar sightings. And again, the common thread was the glowing red eyes. So this kind of got my curiosity going where I was like, okay, you know, there very well could have been the theory. And as a matter of fact, Ferrant had that in the first place of this could be just somebody that's messing around with us, right? Or this isn't necessarily something paranormal, but more so like people engaging in rituals or whatever else. So I kind of wanted to tap into the history of David Ferrant and Sean Manchester a little bit. So both of them were passionate about the paranormal from an early age and eventually became paranormal researchers, but they both had their own kind of perspective on how they did this and how they addressed the supernatural. So David Ferrant was a self-proclaimed psychic investigator who conducted seances and was interested in the occult, whereas Sean Manchester was a bishop in the old Catholic Church and had a more of a religious approach to the paranormal. He was even an exorcist at one point. So David Ferrant's interest in the paranormal led him to explore the Highgate Cemetery. So he was actually doing investigations in the cemetery before this whole vampire phenomenon occurred. And he had witnessed strange phenomena on several occurrences. So he started conducting these investigations in the cemetery and documenting his experiences. Sean Manchester, on the other hand, as far as like I understand it, he became more involved after hearing about Ferrant's investigations and of course hearing about it in the media. So his belief was more so that Ferrant's actions were attracting negative energies. And he considered Ferrant to be irresponsible and wanted to be like this more savior type and try to counteract them.
Got it.
So Ferrant's approach, obviously, to the Highgate vampire investigation was more intuitive and mystical. He believed in using psychic techniques and seances to communicate with spirits and understand the supernatural. He got involved in the Highgate vampire situation after hearing stories and reports to the British Society. Whereas Sean Manchester, like I mentioned, had more of that religious perspective. And so he saw the Highgate vampire, not so much as a vampire, but more so as a demonic force that needed to be exorcised. So he saw this more as like an evil spirit. Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah.
Just based on the accounts.
And I don't know any
vampires that I know of, so I don't have a frame of reference.
Right? Let me just like call
them actually are versus how like pop culture has depicted them.
Yeah, it is an interesting thought, especially when you think about the folklore of vampires, right? And like how they were something, they do kind of act in a possession sort of way, right? Like taking over someone's body at some point.
I've been reading so many vampire romances. Just like already in my head, I'm like, maybe he's just misunderstood. It's fine.
I've been back on my Vampire Diaries kick, so it's really funny that you say that.
Oh, funny. Nice. Same vibe for sure.
It's that time of year in October, you just start digging into the vampire romances. It just happens. So yeah, so Manchester believed that the vampire was a malevolent entity that required a strong spiritual intervention to banish it from the cemetery. Mm. So you have people making these claims, right? You have this tension that's really occurring between these two paranormal investigators. They're starting to really become rivals. And then you have like the animal mutilations and all of that. So the media starts really getting wind of all of this, and it starts becoming a media frenzy that eventually actually gains national recognition for the entire country.
So the animal mutilations, not to like stay on that topic for very long, but are these animals just like anywhere in the cemetery? Like, is it just like there's a mutilated animal like on the path, or was
no there- they were kind of sprinkled throughout the cemetery. Sprinkled is probably not the best word, but yeah, they're all around the cemetery, and it's like several different types of animals. Foxes were the most prominent, but it was also things like rabbits and stuff like that too.
But not like, so more like concentrated small location, they were everywhere.
No, yeah, they were kind of all over the place. Yeah. And there was definitely some that gave indications of being killed in a ritualistic way. Mm-hmm. So that's where it just kind of gets confusing of, is this an actual spirit, or was this the result of satanic rituals? Who knows? This starts getting national recognition. And interestingly enough, because humans are humans, it sparks mass hysteria and broad curiosity. So you start getting tons of people who are, you know, amateur paranormal investigators that are super fascinated with this story. There was also this huge influx of self-proclaimed vampire hunters that were all like descending on the Highgate Cemetery to slay the vampire, right? Even though nobody knew which grave was the vampire's, what this whole situation was about, but they were all going to take care of it. And then you also just had people who were curious, just were like so fascinated by this whole story. And then it also created a lot of fear. Like, this was still a period of time where there was some religious tension. Like I mentioned, there was this huge spiritual movement with the 1960s and 70s, but also the church trying to step in and be like, this is wild. And then the media also really fed into the rivalry between David and Sean. So that just continued to heighten tensions between them because each of them thought that they had their best case scenario on how they were going to address the vampire, right? They had their way of how they were going to slay it. And particularly on Ferrant's side, he was accusing Manchester of sensationalism and exploiting the situation for personal gain. So you have one that thinks that the other one's trying to be a celebrity, and the celebrity thinks that the other one's trying to doom just the
like trying to have the moral high ground. And
yeah, this is just where this gets wild to me. Not that it hasn't been wild so far, but this media frenzy actually resulted in a run on the cemetery where this entire giant mob,
like a rush on Area 51.
Literally same kind of vibe, like hundreds of people descended on the cemetery. And unfortunately, what really sucks about this situation is, like, again, you had this whole cluster of paranormal investigators, freaked out people who think that they're vampire hunters, right?
Right.
So it resulted in them all vandalizing and desecrating a lot of
kind
graves.
Of, which yeah. is going to piss off other people. Like, ugh.
Right. So they're pulling apart graves. They were actually affecting some of the bodies. And there was like a facet of people who were actually conducting rituals in the cemetery. Like that was demonstrated. And what's kind of most horrifying about the situation was that after this, like, descending on the cemetery, there was a woman's body that was found decapitated and burned. Even today, it's widely believed that this was the result of a true satanic ritual. So just like such an interesting cluster of like all of these parties coming together.
That's sad.
Yeah. And it sounds like, from what I was seeing in my research, that a lot of the impacts of this kind of hysteria created around this vampire and like the mystique and allure of the cemetery has still resulted in a lot of graves being vandalized really regularly and stuff like that still kind of occurring today. So PSA, if you're going to be exploring a cemetery, I don't care if you're hunting vampires or whatnot, be fucking respectful. It's not hard. Yeah. Mind your etiquette in a cemetery, especially one like this that has so much history.
I mean, maybe the vamp, I'm not going to sympathize with the vampire yet. Continue your story.
Well, actually, we're kind of getting to the end of the vampire. So it's just really interesting because there isn't a clear definitive, was the vampire slain, was it not?
So have you said sightings are still allegedly happening, or like things are still happening?
Yeah. So what's interesting is Manchester claims that he slayed the vampire. So This is where I kind of get like, I'm trying not to pick sides between Ferrant and Manchester because I think both of them had their own things. But, you know, when he was so hyped about like the sensationalism and Manchester's really just trying to make a name for himself, but he's the one that really has claimed that he took out the vampire. And so
how did he do it?
The way the story goes, from my understanding, and I think there's some kind of discrepancies around here, so definitely do your own research, but supposedly Manchester was able to track down the grave of where the body of the vampire was being held. And the way that they feel like they found this was they opened the tomb, and it was essentially a body that was super desiccated, like it hadn't drank in hundreds of years compared to other bodies in the cemetery. What I find so funny about this story, though, is that Manchester wanted to avoid potentially going to jail for desecration of a body. So even though we all know that you kill a vampire by driving a stake through its heart, right? Like that's pretty classic vampire 101. he actually claims to have exorcised the vampire, again, holding strong to his, this is a demonic possession situation,
right,
through religious rituals. So he avoided using the stake to keep from going to jail. But I'm also like, if you really truly cared about taking out a vampire, would jail be the first thing on your mind? You know what I mean? That's where I get a little sus.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Continue.
I know. There's so many layers to this, right? So this is probably my favorite part of this whole story. So this claim that he took out the vampire, and you couple this with the media sensationalism, right?
So did the other guy respond to that?
This is what's good. So it led to the eventual escalation of what became known as the magician's duel in the media.
Awesome.
So this was this whole plan that because of this rivalry, that is such a hard word to say, by the way, between Ferrant and Manchester, and the fact that one of them was more powerful than the other, that they were going to meet up and literally have a duel Because they both claim to have the solution to the vampire.
I'm sorry, problem. Why is every man's solution a fucking duel? Like, even now, like, how is that how we're solving our problems? Nobody should have ever let men be in charge.
It makes me realize
I was going to be so anti-man in this episode, but like, fuck's sake, you guys.
It makes me think about like a 1960s paranormal version of like the Elon Musk and like Mark Zuckerberg situation we got. That's going on.
So you know? Funny because I'm imagining it like sharks versus jets, like snappy in an alley, like dance off.
Oh my gosh, has anyone seen the Barbie movie? Like the whole Ken shenanigans.
So good.
So even better though, that this duel was supposed to happen on Friday the 13th.
And of course it didn't happen.
And it was supposed to be on Parliament Hill, but it just never happened. Something kind of fizzled out. And Ferrant claims in his later years that this was actually sensationalized by the media and was like never meant to happen in the first place and was like a creation by the media. But knowing this rivalry between the two of them, I'm like, you guys definitely tried to have a duel. Don't lie.
Talked about it.
Big Stephanie outside vibes.
Right. Yeah. So, and then, you know, the vampire kind of frenzy, though, the way that it was being portrayed and like the interest in it just kind of started to fizzle out, right? Like it just wasn't in the media anymore. There was bigger and more important things, I guess, to address. In 1974, Ferrant was actually jailed after being convicted of interfering with remains and vandalizing memorials in Highgate Cemetery. Ferrant claims, however, that the damage had been caused by Satanists rather than him, but both Ferrant's imprisonment and the rumored duel served to keep the Highgate vampire in the public mind for several years. But soon the media moved on and the frenzy seemed to die down, but the feud between Manchester and Ferrant remained for decades. Literally to the end of time.
I love a grudge.
And they both would spend time trying to dismiss the expertise of the other. All the way up until the creation of social media, they were on Facebook going at it.
Oh my God, stop.
Which I find so entertaining. Like, that's so much energy.
I need to find their Facebook fights. That's incredible.
I know, right? I need to look that up too.
It's disgusting to me that my brain is like thinking of 1970 as being as long, like long as it was not.
Right.
Like, yeah, obviously they were on Facebook.
Also, the fact that like, Ferrant was so concerned about Satanists, like, sure, if it's like true satanic rituals, I get it, but
okay, but like, is that not just a red flag?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, did you single-handedly start the satanic panic, my friend, because you had big concerns?
A Satanist question. Right. Like, I just, for someone right. to like, disprove it so vehemently,
mm-hmm.
not gonna go down that road. I've not had enough whiskey to go down that road. Not political, Cheyenne, rein it in. But like, I don't know, it tends to be the people who are like overtly accusing others right. of wrongdoing are the ones who are doing the bad shit themselves. And then yeah. maybe upholding some level of piety and godliness
right.
to justify it. And I'm just like, or we could just not be shitty people, question mark.
Right, right. So Ferrant actually passed away in April 2019 at the age of 73.
R.I.P.
But Manchester still works as an exorcist and bishop in the British Old Catholic Church.
Shut up, he's still alive?
Mm-hmm. As far as I know.
Okay.
Which is interesting, yeah.
Is he the Highgate vampire?
Ooh, plot twist. Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that was my next
question. My new favorite conspiracy theory.
Right? That was my next question. Did the vampire truly die? Ferrant thought not, and it still seems that sightings of a figure with glowing red eyes are occurring even in the present day, so we're still hearing witness reports of that.
I think I need to just reframe what the word glowing means in my brain, because it is like so animatronic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just cannot imagine it any other way, where I'm like, that's obviously not a real thing. But I don't think it's never that intense, right? It's got to be like more of a subtle glow of like, you can just tell that there are like blood red eyes.
Right.
A cloaked figure.
And I think I like the image that I get is very Nosferatu. Like, I think that was a huge influence in this whole thing, right? Like the really creepy version of Dracula, the old school textbook version of him, you know? Exactly. Interesting. So I was also curious too about theories of the Highgate vampire.
Okay.
Many actually believe that the Highgate vampire was simply the result of mass hysteria and urban legend, while others speculate that it might have been a manifestation of grief and fear associated with death. Which, when we, again, I think we talked about this in our last episode, but the idea that we can actually manifest
like the collective paranormal consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was such a situation of that, right? Like it was not only known really well in this local community, but it became a national sensation.
Hmm.
So can we manifest a vampire? That's a quite interesting thing to think about.
If we can, if we can manifest, if manifestation is that powerful, which like to an extent, I believe it is, right?
Right.
But like, why are we manifesting this version?
Right. Why can't we make like a fluffy vampire?
Why aren't we making slutty vampires? Like, I don't understand, because like the whole like sucking your blood thing, if we're going to go down like a book talk romance novel.
Here's where the whiskey's kicking in.
It is so strong. So strong. I cannot even tell you. But like feeding, LOL, disgusting. But feeding is like, it's a sexual experience, right? It's supposed to give you the, and actually we talked about
it's
this.
It's a sharing of life force. Yeah.
In our like New Orleans vampire, like in our IRL mm-hmm. vampire story, we talked about this too, of like, it's a very like intimate, sensual, energetic exchange. And I'm just like, why are we manifesting creepy glowing cloaked dudes?
But like, yeah, float around. But that's also what some paranormal enthusiasts argue, that the entity could be a psychic projection rather than a traditional vampire, which is also like an interesting thought.
But how did the first person see it, right? Like, how did those initial accounts start?
Yeah. And that was a question that I was trying to find in my research, because why the cemetery has been around for a while, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, just in 1969, you start having all these vampire witness accounts. Like, last I checked, if I'm pretty up to date on my vampire lore, they don't just pop up overnight. Well,
no, they're around forever. They're fucking immortal.
Unless somebody was turned that night and then they became this, like, maybe they're a baby vampire that just hasn't had their shit figured out yet. And that's why they're eating rabbits and foxes. What was that?
He said he's just trying to make friends.
Yeah. He's not doing a very good job, but
he's a Twilight style vegetarian vampire. And he's like, I am not even killing people. Can you guys calm down?
It's like a whole mob. And these two like dueling paranormal investigators are like, we're going to slay you at all costs. You're just minding your business, but like, you have to go.
It is really interesting to think about the origins of these stories though.
Mm-hmm.
Like who the first person was to send in their account and be like, I had a really fucking creepy experience. And right. Like, what was their creepy experience? Why were they in the cemetery? Like, why were they there in the first place? Were they experiencing a significant amount of grief?
Yeah.
Like, what drew you to that location? Because like, mm-hmm. I fucks around in cemeteries all the time, but that's not like a regular thing that people do.
Right.
Like it's
well, not. And I think that's why they want to bring up the Swain's Lane so much. I think it's like a pretty common place to have to walk.
So you're just by. Like walking by it all the time.
Yeah. Right. But it is interesting again that like if people are walking by the cemetery all of the time, why all of a sudden is there this mass hysteria around a particular thing? And why are they all seeing the same thing at the same time? You know?
Or if it is a manifestation of satanic rituals, which like I don't participate in the satanic panic nonsense
mm-hmm.
Because the people who are perpetuating those stories don't get it. And that's fine.
Right.
But like
those who get it, get it. Those who don't.
And like,
there's going to be like somebody who listens to our podcast and be like, Cheyenne and Shale are total Satanists.
Oh my God. I know. I get very anxious about this all the time because I say horrible things like I'm a simp for Satan, but like not in that way. But like kind of in that way. But it is just really interesting if it is like a manifestation of if people just decided to start, like if satanic rituals, alleged satanic rituals were happening at this time specifically, and it was like a collective consciousness that brought this up.
Yeah.
Okay, but what church is this attached to? Like, was the bishop guy like around the cemetery all the time?
That I'm not sure. I know he was associated with the Catholic Church. Like, that's okay. Where he practiced and whatnot. But
is it next to a church or is it just?
I don't know. I would assume so because it's like a very Victorian, like
Victorian England
cemetery. But yeah, I'm not 100% on that.
And is the 1960s the first actual sightings of this guy, or is this just the first time somebody was brave enough to be like, something fucking creepy happened to me?
Yeah.
About it. Like, how long has he actually been there?
I don't know.
Do we know what the most recent story is? But then it's like in the age of the internet, I don't trust any recent stories.
But like, that's what makes this interesting too, right? Like if it was somebody who was just fucking around, right? Like trying to scare people and has like these animatronic eyes or whatever. If people are still seeing it today, is there like this, I mean, that theoretically, whoever was doing that at that time probably wouldn't be alive still today, right? Right. So is there like this generational Highgate vampire, you know, where it's passed down through the family that you're just going to fuck around with people?
Inheriting this like manifested being.
Which like, I would love to inherit something like that. Like this family is just known for being this creepy vampire and fucking around with people on Friday the 13th, you know, like I would be all about that. That'd be the coolest family dynamic tradition ever.
I just can't get over that we're going to have a magician's duel on Friday the 13th.
That is my absolute favorite part of the story. Like it takes it to the next level.
It's so funny. But like, okay, it's 1960, right? Like
right.
The iPhone doesn't exist. TikTok doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Are you just bored? Is this just like bored kids who were really shitty to animals in the cemetery? And then this whole thing just like spiraled out of control?
Who knows? That's like what I'm saying. Like you could have so many episodes on this where we're just peeling apart all of the layers.
So much effort to exhume a body.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking from personal experience, but it is
like, thank you for clarifying that in case our audience needed to know.
It is like, that's not just like a thing that happens. Like to drive that much hysteria that people are digging up people's final resting place.
And again, these are like mausoleums. These are
they've been here forever. Tombs. They're like concrete structures.
Right. Like they literally look like what you see in New Orleans where it's like these, yeah, like concrete obelisks. Solid structures. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, obviously we have to go to North London. Like, oh my God.
Obviously. Yeah.
Wow.
We got to go see those glowing red eyes.
It is funny. I don't know why.
But again, we'll be respectful because we have cemetery freaking etiquette.
Yeah. Cemetery etiquette. Don't talk about people out loud unless you want to talk to them / have them follow you home.
Don't point. Pointing at people's rude anyway.
Pointing is rude anyway. Why are we
like? You don't like to be pointed at? Imagine when you're trying to sleep, bro.
Just like, I lived such a life on this earth and I can't even just lay in this ground
without people pointing at me.
Teenagers coming in and pointing at me.
Oh my God, that actually does sound like so nightmarish though.
I'm so old.
That actually, like, that's probably like the one thing that really solidified. I mean, I didn't want to be buried in a cemetery anyway, but like that takes it to the next level where no, please, for the love of God, don't put me in a cemetery where people can point at me.
Not to completely change the subject, but like, y'all, water cremation is where it's fucking at.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, it's so cool.
There's something to me about like receiving your remains in a little like milk jug of water that just kind of human composting I'm down with. Like I'm being kind of.
So water composting. No, I can assuage your fears. That's not, I didn't even say the word right. It's fine. I've had whiskey, not even that much, and with a lot of jam in it, and it still tastes like gasoline. How do people drink whiskey by itself? I have no idea.
Honestly, I think about that all the time where I'm like, my like ancestors like cringe every time they see me try to drink whiskey. You're doing great. You're doing great, babe.
Yeah, that was a big gulp and that was disgusting.
She's like crying, y'all.
I don't, okay.
Is it coming out your nose? What are you doing?
So it's fine.
We're fine. It's fine over here.
Here's the thing. If you don't, here's your permission slip.
All right, we're hitting it off.
If you do not like the drink that you're drinking,
you can pour it out.
have to keep drinking it.
Even if you pay money for it. Cause like we actually witnessed that in New Orleans. There was a place that we went to listen to music. The drinks were horrendous. So bad. I'm a sweets girl and I could not, this was like sugar water and whiskey. It was awful. Paid $15 for it. Ridiculous. Yeah. It was like Dixie cup sized. Did not drink that shit. It was awful. Yeah. No regrets.
You don't have to. It's fine.
And I felt great the next day too.
And I had no regrets. The point I was trying to make before I choked and almost died, I have whiskey on my glasses. Disgusting. I'm so sorry you're getting this version of me on episode 2. Oh my God.
Well, we wouldn't want anything else, honestly.
It's gonna be a long season, y'all. we're coming back to it. What were we talking about?
Human cremation. Water cremation.
Thank you. Okay.
You're
water
welcome.
Cremation is fucking cool. I'm going to redeem myself right now. Water cremation, your body is put in this like vacuum chamber, right? And then the water breaks you down in a very short amount of time. I've had whiskey, so I don't quote me on how long it is, but it's like days. It's like a couple of days, if not a day. It's not a long amount of time. But the thing you were talking about getting like a jug of juice.
Ew. What's wrong with you?
To love one. So that's actually great because it's so good for fertilizer for your garden. So you can get the liquid if you would like, but essentially you're put in this vacuum chamber with the water, and it is the amount of water that a single household uses in a day. Okay. This is the
amazing.
This is the most eco-friendly, sustainable way to get rid of a body. Like
even more so than human composting, huh?
Even more so than human composting, because you are not emitting any methane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Checks out. So human composting is great too. Like any green burial is the way to go, but water cremation is just, I think it's legal in 21 states. And it's just now kind of having like a cultural.
They actually do it just down the road from my house. Like they do the human composting and the water cremation and stuff. Like I've been looking into it. Yeah.
So your bones are left over. Your bones don't disintegrate in water. So water decomposes all of your like gushy bits. Disgusting. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm sorry. But you're left with bones. You're left with your bones. And so the bone fragments are pulverized essentially in like a vacuum chamber. And then your people do still get a little baggie of you. They get your ashes, but because it's not ashes and
but it's
not
bone powder.
It's bone powder, so it's significantly smaller too, right? Like when we got my grandpa Jerry's ashes, it's like it's kind of a
it's a box. Ashes. Yeah. It's
like a box full of ashes and
it's an overwhelming amount of ashes.
It is, especially like even if you divvy it up between people, right? Like I have some of those ashes like in a necklace, like in a little charm. We had some of his ashes like melted with or not melted, but like infused in hot glass. Like they make these really pretty.
Like, wow, that's cool. Like you did a lot of different sculptures.
Yeah. So like my aunt has like a heart that has like a wave of ashes through the middle of it. But like, again, that's like a tablespoon of ashes.
Right. Right.
Like, I love the man, but like for a long time, literally my grandpa, half of him was just like in our mudroom in a bag. Because how, like, what do you do with that much?
Right.
And
this is a fair point. I think people feel overwhelmed quite a bit with it. That's why they sit on the mantle.
Yeah, for like where it's years, like, where you're, right? Yeah, you're in like a big mantle or an urn or whatever. And that's fine too. Like I like having that physical reminder, but your people still get a pulver or a bag of your pulverized bones, which is like ash-like. Mm-hmm. And then they can still go like sprinkle it or bury it or do whatever, you know, ritual you need to do to, or like put you in a resting place that you loved or whatever.
Sure.
And then they can take a jug of the water as composting if you would like as fertilizer for your garden.
Right.
But you don't have to, like you can just,
but also isn't there like a really, like when they do water cremation, there's like a lot of the water obviously. And so like, then some of it's donated to farms.
A lot of it's donated to farms.
Also like, what is fertilizer anyway? People like grow up.
Poop. Would you rather it be poop or just like people? I'd rather.
Either way, it's going to be kind of a weird situation. So
it's going to be
nature, y'all. Nature, circle of life.
Yeah. Ashes to ashes. We all return. It's fine.
Also, as somebody who like thoroughly loves gardening, I get so tickled by the idea of people eating vegetables from my remains in whatever capacity.
Well, and like my grandma used to grow beautiful flowers. Like,
yeah.
It would be so nice to literally just be like, I'm going to plant your favorite flowers. Mm-hmm. And like, we're going to go into this like earth and nourish it. And then you become of these,
yeah,
part of these plant spirits. And I think that's gorgeous. I love that.
I think so too. Anyway.
See, I made it cute.
That was cute. There's your permission slip for the night. We also hope you enjoyed this very interesting story of the Highgate vampire. We want to hear your theories. What do you think happened with the Highgate vampire? Do you think it was a malevolent spirit? Do you think it was legit a vampire? Do you think it was people fucking around? We want
to
know.
I mean, to be fair, I know we're trying to like walk me off the line here, but the accounts you were talking about at the beginning do, like, they're very reminiscent of spirit encounters, right? Mm-hmm. Like temperature chill, a feeling, mm-hmm, of dread, like an overwhelming heaviness, like a feeling that you can't leave the area. Like, yeah, that's like all very indicative of a haunting IMO.
But that's also what occurs in all of like the compulsion or things like that you see in vampire folklore. So folklore. So it's interesting to think about.
Fascinating. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for taking me on this journey.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining me on this journey. All right, y'all. That was episode 2. We have more to come. This is our spookiest season yet. Hit us up on Instagram if you have not already. And we will come back at you with another spooky episode next week.
I love you. Cheers, witches.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks. If you're having a witching good time, we hope you'll help us to grow this little coven. You all know it's us against AI in this algorithm world, so please help us out. Please like, rate, and subscribe anywhere you're listening to us. Also, we want to connect with our spooky marg-loving friends out there, so please like and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Links for those profiles will be in the show notes. And hey, be sure to tell us what you're drinking tonight. We love you all so much, witches. Cheers.